Do you just have an idea?
No, that was the computer.
Oh.
All right, so welcome to another edition of the Long and Winding Show with Jay and Mick. And today we're going to finish up the last of the Beatles songs on the Past Masters Volume 2 album. And these are everything from Day Tripper to You Know My Name, Look Up the Number. You want to get right into it?
Yes, please.
All right, so December 3rd, 1965, Day Tripper comes out. This is a great John and Paul vocal. And I wanted you, we've talked about this briefly before in another show when we kind of covered these songs, but in my notes here, I wanted you to explain the Day Tripper concept to me again.
It doesn't have anything to do with tripping, like drug tripping. It's just John is saying that you're a one-day trip. You're not here for the long run. You're just breezing through. You're a tourist.
Gotcha. All right. Well, that explains that, and I remember now you telling me that. I like the guitar in this. I like the lyrics. She's a Big Teaser is a great single line. All in all, this is a great song. It's a good rocker. Like I said before, the guitar is just fantastic, and this is definitely a high point for these selection of songs on this Volume 2 Past Masters album. Next is We Can Work It Out, which is also from December 3rd, so this was a double A-side with Day Tripper. This is a classic McCartney song. It's a great Paul lyric. You know, the life is very short lyric, and
I think that's John's, actually.
Yeah, you're right, it is. I'll probably get hassled for that down the road somewhere. There's no time for fussing and fighting, our friends. I like that a lot. It's just, and the acoustic feel to it, and I think there's an accordion in there somewhere. Am I hearing things, or was that an accordion?
It's kind of like an accordion. Well, the sound is like an accordion. It's actually a harmonium, which is an organ. But it's a pump organ, so it has the same kind of wavery sound of an accordion. But it's definitely not as small as an accordion.
That was really cool.
Yeah, I guess from what I read, that's John playing that.
Oh, that's cool, too. The acoustic feel to the whole song is just really cool. Yeah, this is just another classic Beatles tune. I love it.
And I like the change between 4/4 and 3/4, or maybe 6/8, the waltz time break in the middle, which I think I mentioned before, and I also read before, was George's idea.
I gotcha. So yeah, that's just is. So you agree it's kind of a cool song too. All right, Paperback Writer. I guess we're going to breeze through these two.
One, two, three, four.
Okay, we just jumped over Rubber Soul to get to Paperback Writer.
And that's June 10th, 1966. This is also a great rocking tune. The bass is awesome. The guitar is great. The lyrics are cool. You know, it tells a good story of a guy trying to write a paperback book, and good Paul vocal as usual, and the bass riff at the end is fantastic. And we've covered this before, but I'm going to bring it up briefly again. It's Frère Jacques, right?
Yes.
Okay.
It's 1,000 pages, give or take a few. I'll be writing more in a week or two. I could make it longer if you like the start. I can change it around, and I want to be a paperback writer. Paperback writer!
Rain. I think this is kind of an underrated gem of a song. It's a good John song. The guitar has got a really rocky vibe to it. They're definitely progressing on. Their sound is, you can tell from these couple songs, they're moving to a more of a harder sound. And Paul and George doing the harmonies is cool. And I like when they sing When It Rains, It Shines or something like that. And the drums by Ringo are fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I like this tune. It's underrated. I don't play it a lot, but I do enjoy it. And it's the name of a good Beatles tribute band that circulates out there.
Yeah. And this is one of the first songs where they messed around with backwards tapes.
Well, that's interesting.
They reversed the guitar solo, and they also reversed John's verse at the end. And that inspired a lot of people to start playing Beatles albums backwards, and that's when all the Paul is Dead stuff started coming up.
And as we'll get into, I think next week, we'll discuss how disgusted McCartney was by all that. And, well, I'm going to say, I always want to, in the middle here, we're in the middle of a song, but McCartney definitely has a little bit of a potty mouth in real life.
Oh, in the book? The book you're reading?
I didn't expect that. He seems so prim and proper, you know.
Yeah, it's all an act.
Exactly.
I've been finding out all about it on YouTube. There are all sorts of anti-Paul videos circulating around.
What are they saying?
I just found one the other day. It's like a 45-minute video, and it's Paul McCartney's massive ego.
Well, we all know he has a big ego. He's probably the first to admit that.
Yeah, but I mean, of all people who's entitled to have a big ego, it's a member of the Beatles, for crying out loud. They ruled the world for 10 years.
Exactly, I agree. I don't have a problem with him having a big ego. Lady Madonna, March 15th, 1968. This is a great piano rocker. Reminds me of stuff that Elton John will try to do in the next couple of years. And the saxophone solo is played by Ronnie Scott. Okay, well, anyway, this is a cool tune. And I've heard it so many times, and I heard it yesterday again, and I still... What is the day of the week that he doesn't mention? Is it Friday? Is it Saturday?
It's Saturday. Friday night arrives without a suitcase.
So Saturday is the only day of the week he doesn't mention.
Yep.
The instrumentation is just a great. It gives it real full sound, and I like this tune. It's always a good concert number, and I'm giving it a big thumbs up. It still holds up, I think.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I always got a kick out of the little hair comb kazoo sound that they use midway through. And I also found it really interesting. I never noticed on LP, but when I got the CD of it, there's also a bass line under the little trumpet sound that they're making, which I never noticed. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, the bass sounds really good in this.
Not Paul's bass, but the singing bass that they do under the fake trumpet sound.
Okay.
The do do do.
Yeah.
Doo, 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 doo.
Yeah, I'm with you.
That's it.
Yeah, this.
I never noticed that when I was listening. All the times I listened to the record, because I think this was on the. No, this would be on the Hey Jude record, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's where I heard it, on the U.S. Hey Jude LP, I think. And all the times of listening to it on that, I never noticed that there were two sets of fake kazoo lines.
Yeah, this song just has a really cool sound to it in general, and I think it's really, really cool. The next song is a George song, and I don't have anything to say about it, so I hope you got something.
Now,
The Inner Light.
Yeah, I really don't have much to say about it. I took an instant dislike to this song just because I'm not all that crazy about Indian music. But after all the years of listening to it, it's okay. I like the lyrics. Some of the lyrics are okay. And now that I've had more of a indoctrination into world music, I don't mind the song as much anymore. But
so
I do skip it.
Yeah.
But I don't dislike it.
I skip it as well. I don't have a feeling either way, other than I knew it was George, getting into his Indian music again, and I'm not real fond of that. But I give George credit. He was he kind of like the first person to bring that kind of world music sound to the international stage? I mean, does George get credit for that?
It would seem like it, because he had such a huge following.
Yeah.
I really don't know.
I'm going to give George credit for that. Somebody will probably correct us on it, but maybe our editors will. They're usually good with that stuff. On to Hey Jude, which is August 30th, 1968. And what's there to say about this song? It's Hey Jude. It's a classic Paul song. It's written for Julian Lennon. And I wanted to ask you, before I get into the rest of my notes here, do you think this song is overplayed?
Yeah, I guess. But I wonder if that's just because it's so freaking long that once it starts, it's like, oh, God, here we have to listen to 7 minutes of this.
Do you skip it because you've heard it so much?
Yeah, I do. Matter of fact, I listened to the album this morning, and I did skip Hey Jude.
Yeah, I just...
Just to save 7 minutes.
It's a great piano, guitar, bass, drums, all that stuff's good. The lyrics are good. You know, the movement you need is on your shoulder. It's still a classic line.
No, it's not. It's only classic because you know the story behind it. It's a stupid line.
You're probably right. I'm a little biased. but it's a classic sing-along song, and at the end, we all get into it with the na-na-nas. And,
Yeah, I love it. When Paul sings this live, it's cool. You can sing along with a whole crowd of 30,000 people all singing the song together. It's awesome. It's a great experience. And you can tell people that you sang with a Beatle.
And that's probably the best time that you like to hear it, is when it's played live. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I don't need to hear it anymore.
And my Hey Jude story is the last time I saw Paul live at the Palace, I think. And there was a guy on the other side of the aisle that was screaming out, "Hey Jude! Hey Jude!" all concert long. He started from the beginning of the concert requesting Hey Jude, and it's like, idiot, Paul's not going to start the concert with Hey Jude.
Right.
He's going to wait till the first encore at least, if not the very last song of the night.
Absolutely.
It was driving me crazy. It was like 2 hours of, "Hey Jude! Hey Jude!
Thank you! And good evening, Detroit!" Michigan too. If you have any hair, I want you to let it down. And I want you to have a party. This next song we like to do goes back to the 1970s. Okay.
After a while, I wondered if the guy had, you know, mental problems or something, because he just would not stop screaming for Hey Jude.
And he probably had a little of alcohol and maybe some mental problems.
Yeah.
The little cool piano at the end is cool, and you hear that on the right side, I think, in the headphones, and that's kind of interesting. I haven't heard this before in the headphones, so that was cool. Revolution?
1, 2, 3, 4.
August 30th, 1968. It's the B-side to Hey Jude, I guess. We kind of already covered this in the slower version. I like the slower version better. I think you said you like this one better.
Yeah, it's tough to say. I might, now that you mention, I kind of like the slow version now, but who knows, it'll probably change tomorrow.
I like the McCartney scream at the beginning. The bass is good. It pounds. The bass just pounds. Mm-hmm. Ringo sounds good on the drums. I like the drums in it. The guitar sounds cool. It's distorted. I like that. It's going to be all right. I always like that lyric. And the keys at the end sound pretty cool, too. I like the song, but do prefer the slower version.
I changed my mind already. I like the faster version.
They're both good. I don't know. I just like that. Do we agree that the slower version was kind of doo-wop-y?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it was a good idea when John was arguing to make Revolution the single and he was shouted down and he just decided to speed it up. And I thought that was a great decision because they really are like different songs that way.
Yeah, they're both, I guess they're both good. I mean, they are both good in their own right. We covered Don't Let Me Down on our, I'm sorry, we're on the Get Back, which we covered that as well on the Let It Be podcast, and we covered Don't Let Me Down also on that podcast. It's on Naked. What do you got to say about those two songs briefly? Because I have nothing to add.
No, it's just, like I said, it's funny that for Get Back, the version that's on Let It Be is supposed to be live because it starts with crowd noise and them talking at the microphone.
Uh-huh.
But the song recording is actually from the studio. And this single, which has no crowd noise and it makes it sound like it's recorded in the studio, was actually recorded live and outdoors on top of a roof.
Oh, okay.
So this single version is actually live. And you could say the same is true for Don't Let Me Down, except Don't Let Me Down single and album version are the same.
And we both like both of these songs. Get Back is cool to hear in concert, too. Ballad of John and Yoko, 30th of May, 1969. This is a classic song. Now, I hope you're going to tell me this part's true. This is only John and Paul doing this song. No other Beatles are involved.
Yep. Yeah, it's true. John wanted to whip this song out. It was kind of like his idea of a blog post or an audio podcast. He wanted to write a song about what was going on right now and get it out as soon as possible so it would still be current. And Paul happened to be around, so he contributed. And John was very touched by that because John and Paul were, you know, they weren't the best of friends at that time. So John really, really liked the fact that Paul was pitching in and helping out. And that's why when John recorded Give Peace a Chance, he credited it to Lennon McCartney.
Oh, just, that's a good nod.
Just as a little tip of the hat to Paul participating with Ballad of John and Yoko.
I think this is a great song. I love the lyrics. Gonna Crucify Me is just so cool because John was getting a lot of crap at the time. The guitar riff is just awesome. The piano's great. And it's just cool to see the two of them together again, and the harmonies are awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And this has got to be one of my favorite songs in this album, and it's definitely in my top, 30 or so Beatles songs. I love this song. I crank it up every time I hear it. I just really like it.
I like the mix on this. I was just noticing it this morning when I was listening to it. It really has a contemporary mix. It's not that really weird sounding mix that the most Beatles songs have, where the vocals are tucked away in the side and like all of the drums are tucked to the left. And this has a nice even spread, like a contemporary mix.
Yeah, I like this. It does sound cool, yeah. I mean, it does have a good sound to it. You're right, now that you mention that, because I play all this on the headphones, so yeah, I agree with that. Old Brown Shoe, 30th of May, 1969, B-side to Ballad John Yoko.
The only thing I know about Old Brown Shoe is that John mentions it on one of the Christmas albums.
It's the same old song, but a different meaning.
Copyright, Johnny.
Copyright, can't say that.
Hey, yeah. All right, what are we going to do? What's out of copyright? Yeah.
How about we'll get the lilacs in an old brown shoe?
And I wonder if, like, that was a common phrase, and that's why George picked it up and wrote a song about it, or I always wondered that, because there were a few years in between that Christmas album, which was like 65, 66, and this song, which is in 69. So I always wondered if there was a connection between that.
I can't understand the lyrics. Can you understand? I've heard this song, I don't know, a good part of my life. I'd never been able to understand the lyrics. Have you had that problem?
I really don't pay much attention to the lyrics.
So it might be unmemorable, huh?
I'm not a big fan of this song, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's not one of my favorites either. I just hate the bag on George, though, because we get so few George tunes.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of this song. There's something, I don't know what it is about this song, but I don't really care for it. Which is going to be odd when we start talking about the Yellow Submarine songs.
I thought I heard Paul doing harmonies on this. in this song, but it may be John, I'm not sure. This isn't one of my favorites, but, you know, it is what it is. It's a George tune, and I'm going to give him thumbs up just for that, even though I skip it most of the time. Across the Universe, December 12, 1969, the Wildlife version from the charity album No One's Gonna Change Our World. And we covered Across the Universe, I think, pretty thoroughly on our Let It Be podcast. And I think the only thing that's different about this is there's that bird flying around intro.
Well, it also has backing vocals.
Okay. And I thought I heard a sitar, too. Was I wrong on that?
Yeah, there's a sitar, but there's also one on Let It Be Naked.
Yoko's on the track, right?
No, I don't think so. I thought that they just brought a couple women in from the street, practically. They just found... They needed female vocals, so they just went out and found a couple women to sing into it. And that's why they're not that good. It's a shame.
Yeah.
And I think their out-of-tune singing is the one thing that keeps this version of the song from being my favorite version of the song.
Yeah, that's why I want to credit that to Yoko, because I thought the singing was so bad.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, from what I read, I remember reading that they just grabbed some, that, you know, they sent the roadies out, find us some women who can sing, so they just went to, like, the nearest pub and asked around for anybody who wanted to sing on a Beatles song. And they're on the left side, and the Beatles' male voices are on the right side. And for some reason, the Beatles' backing vocal is not in the Let It Be Naked version, which I'm kind of surprised at. I was just listening to all three of them this morning before the recording, and it's really strange that the Beatles didn't include their own backing vocals. I miss that. I really do miss it on Let It Be Naked, those backing vocals.
But overall, it's still a great song.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. But I'm just trying to figure out which of the three versions is my favorite. And I thought it was the Let It Be Naked version, and I think I said that in the Let It Be podcast. But now, having heard the Wildlife version, I'm thinking I like this version better, despite the out-of-tune singing.
Yeah,
I like the backing vocals.
Yeah, that does add something to it, but that's why I said I thought it was Yoko, because they were so terrible.
Yeah.
The next song is Let It Be, which is, we've covered pretty thoroughly, and it's a classic, and what else can we say about it?
Yeah, it's like a hybrid between the Let It Be Naked version and the Let It Be Phil Spector version, because it still includes some brass in the background and some extra instrumentation, but the Let It Be Naked one is definitely more stripped down.
Which I like. I like that version quite a bit.
And they both have the same guitar solo, which I think is the same solo from the movie, but the Let It Be Phil Spector album has a different guitar solo, which I like better. So I guess I'm going to have to edit my own version, a fourth version of the song, to come up with the one I really like.
The last song on this album is You Know My Name, Look Up the Number, which is a March 6, 1970 B-side. This is a weird, weird song.
Mm-hmm.
But something, strangely enough, I like it. I like that the Paul vocal at the beginning, and there's that piano part, and then gets kind of jazzy there. And then John goes into his Dennis Hopper thing, or maybe it's the other way around. Then Paul does his lounge jack thing. John does a little silly part there, and then there's that strange voice that comes on, and then there's more piano in the other half, and then John talks silly gibberish, and then that's it. it's just a strange song, and I was hoping you might have had a little bit of background on it.
Not really. I don't know what inspired this song, except I think they just had that phrase in their head, and they were just noodling around in the studio and just had nothing else to do, so they spent the whole day recording this. But I kind of like it. It's a throwback to their Christmas LP, or Christmas records, where they would just do little skits and just be silly. And I don't recall ever hearing this song until the Past Masters CD.
This wasn't on the Rarities album?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know if it was either, but I didn't hear it until Past Masters either.
Yeah, so it was kind of cool. It was like a brand new song, even though it's not much of a song, but it was still fun to listen to. It's like a little skit they came up with. And it's still listenable, even though it's such a stupid little song. I guess that shows the magical power of the Beatles, that they'd come up with just this stupid little 30 seconds worth of music and turn it into a really fun 5 or 6 minutes, or however long it is.
Yeah, 4 minutes and 19 seconds. And I like that beginning part when Paul does his really forceful voice, "You know my name." I love that. And yeah, this song's pretty cool, and I think I'm going to recommend it to our listeners today. They need to go check it out.
And it's interesting that on the anthology, they say that they have the complete version of You Know My Name, but it's not complete. So you need both versions. You need the anthology version and the Past Masters version. Edit them together, and then you'll have a complete version.
So we're talking about an 8 or 9 minute song.
No, it's like 6 minutes. It's around 6 minutes. I'm trying to find it, but I can't. I've got it, the anthology listing right in front of me. I take it back. It's on Anthology 2.
Wow, that's interesting.
And their version of it is 5:43. And also, the anthology version is mixed in stereo for the first time.
Yeah, that's cool.
Although it's not, it's kind of like fake stereo. It's not really stereo, because I don't think they recorded it to be. I think they kind of recorded it live, so they didn't really record it in stereo.
I think if you have a couple beers, some good IPA beers, and you turn on this song, you'll be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, it's fun. It is fun.
So now we have to go back in time again and do the Yellow Submarine songs.
Oh, you know, okay, I got it. Their complete version is 5:43, and my complete version is 6:13.
Oh, wow.
So there you go.
So we'll have to edit some of your version in.
Oh, God, no. No, I'm not going to do that, because it's just a compilation of the two of them. I just took the parts that they cut out of the complete version that are still in the album version and put them together. So the only way you'd be able to tell is by including the whole 6 minutes, yeah. And I'm not doing that.
Yeah, I definitely don't want to do that. All right, so we're done with Past Masters. On a whole, what do you think of this album before we get into the other stuff today?
It's good. It's really good. It's not a complete collection of their singles, because some of the singles were tucked into the Magical Mystery Tour album. So it does take a giant leap between... what are the tracks? I was going to mention it when you were talking about the singles, but they go from Rain all the way... They go from Rain, which is before Revolver. They jump over Revolver, Sgt. Pepper's, and Magical Mystery Tour, and then come down onto Lady Madonna. So that's a giant jump between Rain and Lady Madonna.
Absolutely.
Skip two of their greatest albums and the Magical Mystery Tour songs, which are pretty cool, but aren't necessarily a great album.
Yeah. And so on a whole, you like this collection, though?
Yeah, I was skeptical when I heard about it. It's like, oh man, why are they separating their singles like that? But then when you listen to them, when you look at the track list and you realize how many great singles they had apart from their great albums, it's just really impressive.
I agree wholeheartedly. You want to get into Yellow Submarine here briefly?
If you insist.
Hey, Bulldog. The first song.
That's not the first song.
Well, that's the first one that we didn't already cover.
No, it's not.
There's another one on there?
Yeah, I was just looking at it.
It's Hey Bulldog, All Together Now, and no. Only a Northern Song, right?
Only a Northern Song is the second track. Yellow Submarine's the first track. Only a Northern Song is the second track.
Well, I listened to them in the wrong order then.
Yeah, you're in shuffle mode or something.
You want to do Only Another Northern Song first?
Yeah, get this out of the way.
All right. The lyrics are interesting. Something about the chords and the chord of progression I thought was interesting. I don't know. It's kind of peppery, but it's not as good. It's not good enough to be on Pepper. I don't know. I guess I kind of liked it. I thought it was kind of cool and trippy a little bit, but it's skippable. And I think George Martin agreed that this wasn't good enough to be on Pepper. And I'm going to have to agree with him. I hate this two George songs in a row, but I just don't like this one either.
Nah, George deserves it for this song. This song is really bad. I do not like this song. And he wrote it because he was contemptuous of the record company. Or the song publisher, not the record company, which is Northern Songs Limited. Right. So he wrote this just to show his contempt, and you can tell. He was not in the right frame of mind to be writing this song, and you can tell. It just seeps out of it. The contempt just seeps out of it.
I wonder how the rest of the band felt about that. Mainly Paul and John.
I don't know. They participated in it, didn't they?
Yeah, that's kind of odd too, but you're right. It's very contemptuous, but it's just not a good song. I hate to say it, but I don't know. I hate to say that about George, but it's just not good. What's the next one we got?
All Together Now.
Well, this might be the first time that I say something bad about a McCartney song. It's silly. It's not great. Love how John does that part of the chorus when he goes sail the ship. That's cool. And I wrote a little asterisk by this note. He's playing this in concert now, which is strange in itself. It's a very kiddie song. It reminds me of something Ringo would sing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's catchy. It's a catchy song. I don't know if it's worthy of being a Beatles song. I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
I like it.
You like it a lot?
Yes, I do. It's fun. It's just a fun song. And I always got a kick out of when Paul says, "All Together Now," you assume that he's going to go into a chorus, a big catchy sing-along chorus. But no, all they do is say, "All Together Now," over and over again. I still get a kick out of that. It's funny. And you can tell they were having a lot of fun with the little stupid sound effects in the background, the old-timey horn, car horn. And you can also tell that this was a slapdash quickie recording because you can hear them doing the guide vocal to themselves while they're recording the backing track on the left side, and then you can hear the actual vocal on the right side.
Yeah, I don't hate it, but I'm trying to be objective.
No, I like it. It's a stupid little silly song, and it's still fun. It's fun to listen to.
Oh, definitely. I agree with that. I don't skip it. I think it's very catchy, and it is fun. I just think lyrically it's very light, but you know, some of the songs are like that. Hey Bulldog.
Yep.
I like this a lot. Piano's awesome. The harmony's great. John just kind of growls, and the song just rocks. It's got great percussion. And when John rips into "You Can Talk to Me," that part is just phenomenal. I like the dogs barking and the howling, and I don't know. I'm assuming that's both of them doing that.
Well, it's mainly Paul.
I just love that part. I think that's cool. And it's got that great crazy ending to it. And I just think this song is awesome. And it's on, I believe it's on Rock Band. I think they have a version of this on Rock Band.
It is.
But that's cool in itself that, you know, something from Yellow Submarine albums being recognized on Rock Band. Yeah, I like this song a lot. I'm giving it a big thumbs up.
Yeah, this is a great song. This is definitely a rocker. It's still a rocker. It still sounds great. You can confidently play this song to some millennial, and they'll still appreciate it for being a rock song. And if they don't, screw them.
Yeah, speaking of that, a family member mentioned that this is one of the... she's not a family member yet, but she will be extended family down the road. But she mentioned this is her favorite Beatles song. So, yeah, I think this song holds up a lot. And that brings us to the end of the Beatles.
No, there's still another song.
What do we got?
I know why you want to skip this song, but there's still another song. It's another George song. It's All Too Much.
Oh, you know what? Give me something on it, because I didn't even play that one.
Well, good for you.
And now that you mention it, I can't even remember how it goes.
Well, I'm not going to sing it to you. This is 6.5 minutes, just shy of 6.5 minutes. And it's a real endurance test if you can get it to the end. But actually, listening to it again this morning, I have to admit that I kind of like this song. This song is very close to being listenable. Because it's got a decent melody and it's got some really cool lyrics. It's just that George sings it with this sneer, and he also doesn't bother keeping in tune, especially when you compare it. When he recorded two versions of it, two vocals overlaid on top of each other, and he doesn't bother keeping in tune. And it's another song where he's just showing his contempt, but still, it's not a bad song. They just need to lop off a good 3 minutes of it. And it wouldn't be that bad.
Now that I'm looking at the lyrics, I do remember it. I can't add anything to this conversation, though. But
I kind of like the melody and I like the lyrics. I just don't like the recording of it because it goes on way too long. And it's just got all this stupid trumpet sounds. And they say it's a bass clarinet, but I always thought it was like a medieval sackbut because that's what it sounds like. It does not sound like a bass clarinet. But all this stupid stuff that they add to it just to make it a giant mess of a recording.
Is it a peppery tune then?
No. There's got to be this separate subset of just stupid songs that they record, just like "What a Shame Mary Jane Had a Pain at the Party."
Yeah.
That kind of garbage where they're just recording experimental crap. And making these songs last way too long. I don't know what era that would be. It's Yellow Submarine era.
You giving this a thumbs up or a thumbs down?
Yeah, more thumbs down, but not totally down. It's worth a curiosity listen, but this is not a very good example of a Beatles song. And it's a shame that George kind of gave up on songwriting for a few months. But when he recharged himself, he came back with Something and Here Comes the Sun, because those are the next albums. No, yeah. I take that back. What am I saying? Let It Be was next. See, I'm looking at the release order.
Right.
The chronology.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I'm wrong. So the Let It Be songs came next, which were okay. He had a couple interesting songs. They weren't great. But then, after Let It Be, he came back with a gusto and came up with his two greatest songs.
Absolutely, I agree. And so does that bring us to the end?
Well, we could still do Free as a Bird and Real Love. Those aren't, I don't know if you could consider those Beatles songs. They're Beatles recordings, but John didn't write them with the Beatles in mind. He wrote them as solo songs.
Maybe we should tag those on when we get along in the McCartney discography, since they came out in the 90s.
Okay.
But I definitely want to cover those, but let's not get into them today, because I want to go back and listen to them again. I should have. I didn't think about those two songs. I like Free as a Bird quite a bit. But let's get into that down the road. And I guess I just wanted to mention before we wrap it up, what do you think about this McCartney and Kanye West collaboration? We didn't talk about it last week.
I don't really know much about it, actually.
He doesn't sing on it, thank God. He does play the keyboards, and it's some kind of love letter to his son, Kanye West's son, and McCartney just plays keys on it, or keyboards, I'm sorry. The song, I don't care for it, but I think it's good to throw in here at the end. It's what current news. Do we want to do any recommendations? Should we start a trend? Do we recommend something?
Are you talking about the book?
We could do that. Yeah, we could recommend this book. I like it so far. Man on the Run. I think it's very interesting. Talking about the, like you said last night when we were talking about the breakup all the way until the Tug of War album, and it seems like it's a pretty brisk read so far.
Yeah, I got through it in just a couple days. We're talking about Man on the Run. It's a book about Paul McCartney in the 70s, basically from the breakup of the Beatles through the beginning and end of Wings, and it's by Tom Doyle. And I think it came out fairly recently, and I just heard about it and read it and recommended it to Jay. And so that's in our Long and Whiny Show book club.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to finishing it. It's very interesting, and we'll hopefully be covering some of the trivia we've learned and into the McCartney album next week.
I found it at just the perfect time because I really don't know much about Wings, and so it was great to read it all right before we start talking about Wings. Now I'm not quite as uninformed.
So next week we have the McCartney album. We'll cover that in depth. And then we'll move on to Ram, which is one of my favorites. And I think Wildlife's in there somewhere. And of course, by 1973, McCartney gets into the classic Band on the Run album, which might be a lot of people think the high point of the 70s period. But we'll leave that up to debate. But that's where we're heading. We're heading into finally heading into the reason we started this whole show, discussing in depth Paul McCartney's solo discography, and we have 40 plus years of material to cover, so that should be fun. Any closing remarks? And we've closed the door on the Beatles now. We're done.
Yeah, I'm not qualified to give a sum up of arguably the world's greatest band. So it's just a shame that it ended the way it did.
Absolutely.
With them in court suing each other.
Yeah, that's really sad, and I think we'll talk briefly a little bit about that next week. That's a whole saga unto itself. I guess before we shut the door, I wanted to ask you, because there's been a lot of stuff on the web in the last couple weeks about millennials not knowing who the Beatles are and whatnot, what do you think is going to happen here to the legacy of the band? Where does it go forward from here? Because, you know, popular music's changed so much since the Please Please Me album. I know my feelings, but I want to ask you, do you think that they're still going to be talking about the Beatles in another 50 years from now?
Yeah, I think so. My initial tendency is just to be very critical about it, because I do know a lot of 20-somethings that don't know anything about anything that happened before they were born, which just amazes me. I think, I mean, they released, when they released the Beatles box set, that sold pretty well, and the even the really expensive vinyl LPs are selling fairly decently. So I think there's still enough interest. You just can't base it on how stupid people are on Facebook and Twitter.
Absolutely. That Rock Band sold well as well.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. So I'm generally pessimistic about these things, but when I step back and take a breath, it's like, I think they're going to do okay. I think the Beatles will still be remembered.
Will we still be talking about them 50 years from now?
I won't.
So you're saying they're still going to be discovered. They're still going to be an impact. They're still going to have an impact well into the future. I mean,
yeah,
I
think just think what a Beatles song is going to sound like 50 years from now when they separate all the tracks and turn them into 3D holophonic holograms that are injected directly into your brain. You don't even need headphones anymore.
Yeah, that's cool. That'd be awesome. Yeah, I think their legacy is safe. I mean, they are the most successful band of the 20th century, and they just influenced so many artists. And I mean, I think they still are influencing artists. Yeah, the Beatles are the best.
Yeah, there's a page on Reddit for the Beatles, and it's kind of fun to check into it every once in a while, and then you see these people that are saying that they never really thought about the Beatles because they're such a constant, but then they actually listen to some of their songs, and they really get into them, and they're requesting, what album should I listen to next? I just heard this song, it was really cool, what should I listen to next? So that's fun to see.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to meet some young punk kid and turn him on to the Beatles. You know, that would be fun. But hopefully somebody's going to stumble across our podcast and go back.
Oh, God, I hope that this should not be their first thing, their introduction to the Beatles. God forbid.
think it'd be cool if they found our show and went back and picked up an old CD or something off iTunes. I think that'd be fun. I guess my last statement is I think that we've become a single-driven track consumer lately. We don't the art form of the album may be dead. Do you agree with that?
That's what I'm told, but I don't know. I think for like Sgt. Pepper, that might be difficult because some of the songs go right into the next one. So if you just buy one song and it suddenly ends abruptly, you're going to go, hey, wait a second. Where's the ending to this song? And so then you have to buy the next song to hear the ending of the first song. And then before you know it, you bought the whole album, just track by track. I still like albums because it's nice to hear these recordings in context. And I'm not talking about Beatles. I'm talking about all bands. If a band's going to release 10 tracks all at once, I'm more likely to buy the 10 tracks and hear them all together in the order that the band intended. And then later on, after I've become more familiar with them, then I'll go into shuffle mode just to mix things up.
Yeah, I agree.
But The people that buy just singles are, like we were talking about before, these are day trippers. They're not in it for the long haul. They just want to pick and choose, and I think that's a very... man, I was on a roll, and I lost my train of thought.
I think it's short-sighted.
Yeah, it's they're just glossing over it, and for those people, I don't think there's much hope. But for people that are really into music, I think they'd be more likely just to buy the album. If a band's going to release an album and you like that band, buy the album.
I think that's what's good about the only streaming site that I'm really into right now, Spotify. You can get a whole album by artist, or you can listen to just individual tracks. And I think that kind of keeps the album alive a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I like to know the order bands put their stuff out, because then you can hear their musical progression. But if they're just releasing song after song and you don't know when their stuff's coming out, it's so easy to get lost. It's like, what should I listen to next? It's just a collection of songs. I have no idea which single follows which other single. So I don't know. I don't like the idea of just picking and choosing like that.
Which
But that's kind of my OCD too. That's also coming into play.
So I'm going to bring it full circle, and I'm going to go back to Songs of Innocence. In order to understand those collection of songs, I think you need to hear them as an entity. Mm-hmm. And without hearing them as an entity, I don't think you get the full experience of what U2 was trying to do.
Yeah, I was just, speaking of that, I was just going through my U2 playlist the other day, and I was finding all these songs that I forgot about. And these are the singles that they released on iTunes, like a special download. And I just forgot about them because they're not connected to an album. So it's so easy to get for these singles just to get lost in the mix.
Exactly.
But if it's an album, then I'm more likely to it has a little anchor to it. These songs have an anchor to them. And I can go, oh, yeah, I know that song. It was like track 3 on that album.
Yeah, I think we need to get back to an album oriented consumer base again. I mean, that's the way it's always been done, and just in the last decade or so, we've gotten into this single craze, and it's just not fair.
It is nice for bands that you don't like that you can pick and choose what singles you want, but if you're really into the music, you need to buy an entire album. But if you know going in that this album that's really popular, but it only has a couple good songs on it, it's really nice just to be able to buy those couple good songs and screw the rest of it.
Yeah, that's a whole other issue about filler. A lot of these bands put a lot of filler on nowadays. Mm-hmm. And that's just too bad.
But I can't... I hate to think that there are that many people that are just picking and choosing everything.
I don't know. I think there is.
There's so little interest in actually following musicians and their output.
Well, I mean, the whole band, the idea of consuming music has just changed so drastically since the Beatles.
Yeah.
It's just not the same anymore. And CDs are going to go the way of the dinosaurs soon. And it's basically just going to be an iTunes and a streaming driven way to consume music. And
even I've stopped getting CDs, but that's only because I'm upgrading to HD songs that are higher than CD quality. So that's what I've been doing. That's why I don't buy CDs that much. I'm trying to get even better quality.
Well, yeah, that's cool too. I mean, yeah, getting the best quality out there. I mean, even Spotify doesn't give you the best
sound. Oh no, they're below CD quality. But I'm talking about a site like HD Tracks, which is like two or three times better than CD quality.
Yeah, that's cool. I need to check that out too.
But you can't stream HD Tracks because your connection won't be strong enough to do that. Because right. these files are big.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we've got a good show today. We've covered a lot of stuff. And we're closing the door on the Beatles. So next week we're on to McCartney, 1970. And hopefully we'll have some good trivia from this period of time, since there was, as Mick mentioned, various lawsuits going on between the band and Paul McCartney and vice versa. And of course the Viper, known as Alan Klein, is also in the mix. So maybe we'll talk about him a little bit too. I guess we'll wrap it up by telling everybody where they can find us, and that's it.
Well, the website is thelongandwinyshow.com. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/longandwiney, and on Twitter at twitter.com/longandwiney. And if you want to email us, you can contact us at podcast@thelongandwinyshow.com.
All right. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week for another edition of The Long and Winey Show. As Ringo would say, peace and love.